Now we will. Number one.
So, are you going to see the student play tonight?
I doubt it. I'm still getting over the flu.
What does the man mean? Number two.
Gordon needs to find another place to live. The apartment he rents now has been sold to a new owner.
He better start looking right away. When all the students come back in a few weeks, he won't find any near the campus.
What does the woman suggest Gordon do? Number three.
Mind if I borrow your Spanish workbook?
Not as long as I have it back in time to take to class this evening.
What does the man mean? Number four.
You know that quiz we took in Dr. Turner's class today? Did you know that she was going to give it to us?
Actually, I was just as surprised as you were.
What does the woman mean? Number five.
I don't know which color folder to use, white or brown.
What difference does it make? It's the content that's important.
What does the man mean? Number six.
You know, I've heard that Professor Martin's introduction to chemistry class is way too demanding for first-year students. They say it's as hard as the courses for graduate students.
Yeah, but a lot of students will tell you otherwise. Go talk to anyone who's gone on to an advanced course like organic chemistry or who study chemistry in graduate school. They're really glad they started out with Professor Martin.
What does the man imply about Professor Martin? Number seven.
Hey, Mark, have you been able to sell your old piano yet?
You were right. Just posting notices on bulletin boards at a couple of supermarkets wasn't enough. I think I'll have to place an advertisement in the local newspaper.
What does the man imply?
Number eight. My back has been aching ever since I started playing tennis on the weekend.
Haven't you had that checked out yet?
What does the woman imply?
Number nine.
Hi, I think something's wrong with the washing machine. It works, and I just did my laundry, but it made some strange noises. Maybe you should call someone to fix it.
Oh, don't worry. Someone from the repair shop is already on the way over to take a look at it.
What does the man imply? Number 10.
It's so thoughtful of you to offer to drop me off at the train station. Are you sure it's not out of your way?
Not at all. The station's really close to where I'm going.
What does the man mean?
Number 11. I'm here about the job you advertised in the paper.
You need one of those forms over there, on the table next to the file cabinet.
What does the woman imply the man should do? 13.
I have to drive into Chicago next week. Do you have a map I could borrow?
Sorry, I don't, but I can pick one up for you while I'm at the bookstore.
What does the man mean? Number 14.
What did you think of the paintings that Ted was showing last week?
I never made it to the exhibit. What does the man mean? Number 15.
Did you hear about the big snowstorm in Iowa yesterday? 3 feet in 12 hours.
Yeah, and I hear it's headed our way. We're supposed to get the same thing tonight.
What does the woman mean? Number 16. You're joining us for dinner tonight, aren't you?
Oh, I'm really sorry, but I had the wrong date for my geometry test. I just found out it's tomorrow, and I need all the time I can get to prepare.
What does the woman imply? Number 17.
I can't decide whether I should take physics now or wait till next semester.
You might as well get it over with if you can.
What does the man suggest the woman do? Number 18.
You look different today. Did you get a haircut?
That's funny. You're the third person to ask me that. But all I did was get new frames for my eyeglasses.
What does the man imply? Number 19.
Dr. Elliot, I'd like you to check the way you calculated my grade for this test. I think you may have made a mistake in adding up the number of questions I got right. When I added them up, I came up with a slightly higher grade than you did.
I'd be happy to check it for you. And if I made a mistake in determining the grade, I'll be sure to correct it. Don't worry.
What does the man imply? Number 20.
That last speaker was pretty boring, but he did make a few good points at the end.
Really? I didn't catch them. I must have dozed off for a minute.
What does the woman mean? Go on to the next page. Number 21.
If you run into Joan this afternoon, could you ask her to call me? I need that book back that I lent her yesterday.
No need. I saw her this morning. I've got it right here.
What can be inferred from the conversation? Number 22.
I told my students today that I'd be taking a sabbatical next semester, but they didn't seem very surprised.
Well, last week I let your plan slip to some of my students, so more than likely the word got around.
What does the man explain to the woman? Number 23.
Mary, I've got the bowls out for the stew. Do you think that it needs any more pepper before I serve it?
It's really quite nice, and we did exactly what the recipe said. Why take the chance of ruining it?
What does the woman imply the man should do? number 24.
Those were such funny stories Tom told last night. He was like a totally different guy.
Yeah, really. He's normally so serious. What do you think brought all that out in him?
What does the woman imply? Number 25.
Wow, look at all these old books on this shelf. They've got to be at least 100 years old. I'll bet they're worth a lot to collectors.
Well, they've got a lot of sentimental value for me, but that's about it.
What does the man mean? Number 26.
Hey, Susan, would you like to go out to eat with us? Several of us are going over to McCarty's.
Well, that sure beats sticking around here. Just let me pack up my things.
What is the woman going to do? Number 27.
I thought you said you and your friends were just planning a small gathering. I could hear you from all the way up on the fourth floor of the building.
Oh, gee, I'm really sorry. I guess we did get a little carried away, didn't we?
What can be inferred from the conversation? Number 28.
I kept looking for Mary at the seminar, but never did see her. I can't imagine she forgot about it. She'd been talking about it for weeks.
Oh, she didn't. It's just that she caught a really bad cold a couple of days ago.
What can be inferred from the conversation? Number 29.
Our history presentation is Thursday. When do you want to get together to work on it?
Well, how about Monday? That way we'll still have enough time to figure out anything we're having trouble with.
What does the woman suggest they do? Number 30.
Hey, thanks for your help. I guess I can handle the rest myself. But just in case, are you going to be around later?
I don't know, but you can always ask Judy. She's really good with these kinds of problems.
What does the woman imply? This is the end of Part A. Go on to the next page. Now we will begin Part B with the first conversation. Questions 31 through 34. Listen to a conversation between two students.
Hey, Janet, you are so lucky to be done with all of your final exams and term papers. I still have two more finals to take.
Really?
Yeah. So what are you doing this summer? Anything special?
Well, actually, yeah. See, my parents have always liked taking my sister and me to different places in the United States. You know, places with historical significance. I guess they wanted to reinforce the stuff we learned in school about history. And so even though we're older now, they still do it once in a while.
Oh, so where are you going this summer?
Well, this summer it's finally going to be Gettysburg.
Finally? You haven't been there yet? I mean, Gettysburg. It's probably the most famous Civil War site in the country. And it's only a couple of hours away. You'd think it'd be one of the first places they'd have taken you. I've been there a couple of times.
Well, we were going to go about 10 years ago. But, I don't know, something happened. I can't remember what.
Something changed your plan?
Yeah. Don't ask me what it was, but we ended up not going anywhere that year. I hope that doesn't happen again this year. I wrote a paper about Gettysburg last semester for a history class I was taking. Well, about the political situation in the United States right after the battle at Gettysburg. so I'm eager to see the place.
Number 31. What are the students mainly discussing? Number 32. What does the man find surprising about the woman? Number 33. What is the woman unable to remember? Number 34. What does the woman imply about Gettysburg? Questions 35 through 39. Listen to a conversation between two students.
What are you doing?
I'm ordering some filing cabinets out of the catalog.
What do you need them for?
There's so much stuff piling up in my dormitory room. If I don't do something soon, I won't be able to move in there.
Do you usually order from the catalog?
Sometimes. Why?
It's just that in history class today, we were talking about how the catalog sales business first got started in the United States. A Chicago retailer, Montgomery Ward, started it in the late 1800s. It was really popular among farmers. It was difficult for them to make it to the big city stores, so they ordered from catalogs.
Was Ward the only one in business?
At first, but another person named Richard Sears started his own catalog after he heard how much money Ward was making.
What made them so popular?
Farmers trusted Ward and Sears, for one thing. They delivered the products the farmers paid for, and even refunded the price of things the farmers weren't satisfied with. The catalogs became so popular, some country school teachers even used them as textbooks.
Textbooks?
Yeah. Students practiced spelling the names and adding up the prices of things in the catalogs.
Was everybody that thrilled about them?
It's doubtful. See, they drove some small store owners out of business. Sears and Ward sold stuff in such large quantities, they were able to undercut the prices at some small family-owned stores.
Number 35. What is the conversation mainly about? Number 36. Why is the woman reading a catalog? Number 37. Who were the main customers of Sears and Ward's businesses? Number 38. What unusual way were the catalogs used? Number 39. What was one of the negative effects of the catalog business? This is the end of Part B. Go on to the next page. Now we will begin Part C with the first talk. Questions 40 through 42. Listen to a lecture in a zoology class.
The bird you see here in this slide are peregrine falcons. These birds represent a success story among animals on the endangered species list. In the 1970s, the peregrine falcon almost disappeared as a result of the contamination of its food chain by the DDT and pesticides. The presence of the poison in their systems resulted in eggs too weak to support the incubating chicks. Their remarkable recovery is a result of the ban of DDT as a pesticide, aggressive captive breeding programs, and their own resiliency. The peregrine falcon is one of the fastest birds alive. They've been clocked at 140 to 200 miles per hour in successful pursuit of prey. In addition to speed, these birds fly directly into headwinds, and they are capable of flying more than 600 miles per day with favorable tailwinds. Today, with the sophistication of telemetry, the feats of these birds can be tracked by orbiting satellites by means of transmitters attached to the birds. For example, peregrine falcons stage in warmer climates. In other words, they spend time in the southern United States awaiting hormonal changes, preparing them to breed in the Arctic. Then they migrate north to the much colder Arctic regions. Birds have been tracked from Texas in late April to their nesting grounds in Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. Now let's move on to another species of bird, the bald eagle.
Number 40. What is the talk mainly about? Number 41. According to the passage, what makes the peregrine falcon a good hunter? Number 42. How do biologists track peregrine falcons over long distances? Questions 43 through 46. Listen to part of a talk in a music class. The class has been discussing the history of jazz music.
Okay, so in our last class, we were discussing big band swing music. You'll remember this was that kind of dance music with a steady rhythm. But today we'll deal with a style of music played by smaller jazz bands. It's called bebop. Now, bebop made use of all sorts of new types of rhythms, some of them very irregular. We'll talk more about that later, but first I want to talk about some of the social elements that I believe contributed to the development of bebop music. To do this, we have to look at when bebop arose and started becoming so popular, which was from the late 1930s through the 1940s, from the time of the Great Depression right into the Second World War. Now, one factor that certainly helped create the environment for bebop music was the decline of the United States economy. During the Great Depression, the economy suffered tremendously, and fewer people had money to spend on entertainment. Then, during the Second World War, the government imposed a new tax on public entertainment, what you might call a performance tax. The government collected money on performances that included any type of acting, dancing, or singing, but not instrumental music. So, to avoid this new tax, some jazz bands stopped using singers altogether. They started relying on the creativity of the instrumentalists to attract audiences. This is what bebop bands did. Now remember, a lot of big bands had singers, so the instrumentalists simply played in the background and had occasional solos, while the singers sang the melodies to the songs. But not bebop bands, so the instrumentalists had much more freedom to be creative. So they experimented, playing the music faster, and using new, irregular sorts of rhythm.
Number 43. What is the talk mainly about? Number 44. How did bebop bands avoid the performance tax? Number 45. Why does the professor mention the decline of the United States economy during the Great Depression? Number 46. What does the professor describe as a significant characteristic of bebop music? Questions 47 through 50. Listen to a geologist giving a lecture to an engineering class.
Your professor has asked me to talk to you today about a topic that should be of real concern to civil engineers, the erosion of United States beaches. Let me start with some statistics. Did you know that 90% of the coast in this country is eroding? On the Gulf of Mexico, for instance, erosion averages 4 to 5 feet per year. Over the past 20 years, there has been an increase in building along the coast. Even though geologists and environmentalists have been warning communities about problems like erosion. One way communities have tried to protect their buildings and roads has been to build seawalls. However, geologists have found that such stabilizing structures actually speed up the destruction of beaches. These beaches with seawalls, called stabilized beaches, are much narrower than beaches without them. You may wonder how seawalls speed up beach loss. The explanation is simple. If the slope of a beach is gentle, the water's energy is lessened as it washes up along the shore. It is reduced even more as it returns to the sea, so it doesn't carry back much sand. On the other hand, when the water hits the nearly vertical face of a seawall, it goes straight back to the sea with the full force of its energy, and it carries back a great deal of sand. Because of the real risk of losing beaches, many geologists support a ban on all types of stabilizing construction on the shoreline.
Number 47. What is the speaker mainly discussing? Number 48. Why do communities build seawalls? Number 49. How does a gently sloping beach help prevent erosion? Number 50. What would the speaker probably advise engineers to do? This is the end of Section 1, Listening Comprehension. Stop work on Section 1. This is a reminder. At the end of the test, the supervisor will collect all of the test books. You may not leave until all of the test books have been collected. End of recording.